Okay.
From acorns.
Right. So now, good evening. We're now looking at chapter 29 of Tanya, which we began previously, and we are on the third page. That means it's page 127 in the English edition. We're just beginning there at the top of the page. Let's just see. So there it's chapter 29, and there's a little 72 at the top of the page, a little number 72. But in order to understand this, we have to go back to page 125 and 126. That means at the bottom of the page, which has got Lamed Vav on the page. Right? Do you see that? And if you look 2.5 lines up, Susan, do you see Avol Babenini? But in the case of the Benini, see here and there, with an intermediate, however. Right. Okay. So what we're talking about here is the location of our identity. When we say I, who do we mean? Given that Tanya describes for us that we are in fact a mixture of a divine soul and an animal soul, when someone says I, or they think I want, I'm going to do this, who is speaking? Is it the divine soul or the animal soul? What would
you
say?
The animal soul.
What do you think, Susan? Marion says the animal soul.
I'm not sure.
Well, what Rabbi Shneur Zalman says is, in a way, he says it depends who is speaking. You could say also, what is the situation? You see, in the general situation, I think Marion is right. The normal voice, which is driving us to do this or to do that, the normal voice is the animal soul voice. But sometimes in special situations, and always for certain special people, it's the divine soul which is speaking. You know, so it's a matter of understanding that sort of balance. And so what it says over here, Avul Babenini, but in the case of the intermediate person, in other words, not a tzaddik. Now, a person who's not a tzaddik, that includes most of us. And in fact, the Benini, the intermediate person, is a very exalted level of someone who's not a tzaddik, because the Benini is in total control of themselves. And most of us are not in total control of ourselves. Some are. But many people, they fall into, you know, black moods, or they, you know, start thinking about things that really are not appropriate, and yet nonetheless they do that, and they, you know, that's the problems and the flaws of being a person. I mean, that's where God wanted His divine presence to dwell, among people who have this kind of struggle. If He would have wanted perfection all the time, He would have just kept the Torah among the angels, as was one of the claims that the angels made at the first Shavuot when the Torah was given. They said, keep your Torah among us. Don't give it to those very feeble people. And Moshe said to them, Moses said to them, well, if you think the Torah is given to you, look what the Torah talks about. It talks about not committing adultery. It talks about working 6 days and resting the seventh day. Do you get married? Do you do this? Do you do that? Do you work? So it's obviously not for angels. So it's for us. It's for human beings every with day, our problems.
Everyday people, everyday working life, average life.
Absolutely.
Family,
yes.
Life, average people have to go to
yes,
work.
Yes, all the different situations that a person might get into, that's where the Torah is given. And so that's us. And the Beinoni is a person, the intermediate person is someone who's in total control all the time, and so how much more this applies to someone not in total control. So it says, with the Beinoni, since the very essence of the animal soul, Shemisitra Achro, which is from a negative realm, Hamalubeshes Bedomu Obsoroi, and it's enclosed in the person's blood and flesh, their desires, their feelings, Loineh Fachlatoiv, this animal soul has not been transformed into good, Harihihi Ha'odim Atzmai. So when the person says, I want something, he's speaking from that animal soul. The imkain, and if so, now we go over the page. And if so, if you want to look at it in this sort of rather strict way, right, you've got that page 127 at the top. And if so, hu rochok mahashem betachlis harichok, there's a sense in which this person who is aspiring to holiness and goodness and godliness, but in a certain sense he's actually very remote, he's actually very low down the scale. Shahari koyach hamisave shebenafsha bahamis, because the power of desire in his animal soul, yochul gam ken lehisavos lidvorim asurim, is perfectly capable of desiring forbidden things, shehem neged ritzon yisparach, which are against God's will. And this person, because he's got, let's say, a normal animal soul, the animal soul hasn't changed, he's got a normal animal soul, and this animal soul can want things which are forbidden. Now, we're talking about someone who actually is in total control all the time. So therefore, since he's in total control, he doesn't want to actually do them. It doesn't go so far. Because any little step forward of this power of desire in his heart, he immediately stops it. He's got the ability to stop it. So he's not really thinking of doing anything. But the, if you like, the lust, the thirst, is there. And that's something which is really involuntary. There's a sense in which it's involuntary. People can work on themselves and take away that thirst. They can take away that desire. But it's a process of working on oneself, and it may it doesn't always work, and it's certainly not reliable, and there one is left with certain passions inside the heart of the person which are negative, and which the person himself or herself, you know, would say, you know, this is really something very, very negative. And the point is what it says over here, raksha einam mu'usim etzloi be'emes. The idea of this inappropriate behavior, he doesn't find it loathsome, as it would be kibbutz tzaddikim, k'moshen yisbar le'el, as was explained above in chapter 12. In chapter 12, it explains, and other chapters as well, that for a tzaddik, something negative is actually horrible. And that's one of the reasons why tzaddikim don't do negative things, or don't even want to do negative things, because they're extremely unpleasant for them to think about. It's a very painful idea. You know, so a person wouldn't want to do something painful. You know, if you told someone, you know, go and get some pebbles from the beach and eat them, So how can I eat them? You know, it'll break my teeth. Oh, you know, no, do that. So the person's not going to want to do it.
No, it's unpleasant. Very unpleasant.
Saying in Hebrew, I remember learning in Israel, I'm so hungry I could eat stones.
Maybe it comes from that.
From the desert or the old ancient time.
Could be.
Dr. Lanson, when you say, just out of interest, maybe I've got the wrong end of the stick of it, but you know when you say somebody's not in control of themselves, but you're a human being. I mean, if I don't want to do something, no, thank you, I don't do it. If I can't make that, I say, I'm terribly sorry, I've got something, I'm in control of that, I've had to cancel that, end of story, I've done it. Do you know...
Susan, there are different levels of control.
If I don't want to do something, you know, I'm in control of myself. I mean, if I want to, I can do it. If I don't want to, unfortunately, I can't do that. I'm in control. I'm the person. And if I can't do that, or I can't meet that date, or I can't get there on time, I'm in control. I have to postpone things. I'm in control of it. I can't make it. That's it. Well,
That's very wonderful.
I'm in control of what I mean. I think most people. I mean, not everyone, Dr. Lanson, but you're a human being. You're in control of your own life and your own thing. That's the way you make it.
Yes,
you're in control of it.
Yeah, one can't always be.
Not always. Not every. I'm not saying always, Marion. But you know, I mean. Up to a certain amount, up to a certain extent, you are in control of your life, what you do with it.
According to Tanya, we've got the power to be in control of every detail of our life all the time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The problem is that people sometimes behave in ways in which they feel that they are not in control. And they blame the fact that they're not in control. That's why they did it. You know, so you have a whole variety of films and novels about someone doing something which is really destructive and inappropriate for their situation, but they feel they can't hold back, they're drawn to it, and there's nothing they can do to stop themselves, and they just go sliding towards the precipice, and they can see it happening, but there's nothing they can do. I mean, you know, this is where the drama of people who become unfortunately quite self-destructive.
Yeah, I understand.
And one of the teachings that the Rebbe tried to give us very firmly is that we are actually in control of our own lives.
That's what I thought. You know, this is what I would assume. I mean, people, you're your own, as it were, destiny. I mean, if you, as I said, not always, but I mean, if I don't want to do that, I don't do that. If someone phones me, I'm sorry, I have something on, I'm in control of that, I can't do it. But you are in control of your own life.
Yes, and that's the problem. How you put it,
you're in control. Basically, each human being, that is your destiny. You are in control of your life, the way you lead your life. You are in control.
Sometimes a person can't say.
Not always. No. I'm saying not. It doesn't always.
Well, you know,
out.
The word destiny is sometimes a little bit the opposite. Yeah, you know, people say, "Well, it's my destiny to do this and this, even though I don't want to do it." And Marion has got a point that there are situations where a person doesn't feel that they're in control, but really, we could be in control. When the chief rabbi, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Sir Jonathan Sacks, when he went to visit the Bottle Mechaim Lechaim, when he went to visit the late Lubavitcher Rebbe, so he said to the Rebbe in private discussion, he said, "I find myself in such and such a situation." And the Rebbe said to him, "You mean you put yourself in such and such a situation?" And he has often told this over in public, because he says then he suddenly realized that he is actually in control of what he's doing. He thinks he finds himself in a situation. No, you put yourself in that situation and you're responsible
but,
for that.
What the point I was trying to make, Dr. Lanson, as I said, you say you're in control, but people are like, you know, they are in control. Most people, I mean, in control of their life. Well, hopefully, are in control of their life.
Well, the problem, arises.
That's unfortunate.
If a person is really in control, how come anyone ever breaks the Torah? You know, including, let's say, the small print. You know, like there's the main categories of the Torah, and then there's the small print, which is still laws from the Torah, you know. So how is it that a person doesn't keep all those laws? So they say, I have to, for this reason or that reason, I'm forced, at the moment there's no other way, maybe in the future. You know, let's imagine a person is slowly changing over to eat kosher. So for someone who's eaten kosher all their life, it's no problem, you know, there's no question, that's how they eat. But for someone who was brought up, let's say, or habitually was in a situation where they didn't eat kosher, so now to make the switch to only buy from certain butcher shops and not to go to restaurants and not to do this and not to do that and to get new crockery and to get someone to kosher their kitchen and to remember that this is milk and that is meat and not to get them mixed up.
Yeah, I'm in that situation.
Okay.
Very good.
That's beautiful.
At the moment.
Well, so that is, you see, that is a challenge. That is, the person feels a challenge, and sometimes the person says, well, look, you know, I can do this at the moment, but I can't make this other step, you know, maybe in a few months' time, or, you know, I'll go a little step further.
This is what I've done. I've done slowly.
Well.
Slowly.
Well, that's very beautiful.
Different bowls for different milk.
Right.
Different bowls for meat.
Right.
I bought plastic cutlery, so I know that plastic cutlery for that. I use my other cutlery for other things.
Right.
Gradually.
Okay, lovely. Lovely. Well, you see, that's the thing. So we feel that we are in a certain situation and we have to go slowly and carefully in order to change it, in order to make it fit in the right way. So it is a delicate process, you know. And if a person lives alone, that's one situation. What happens if they're living in a family and they decide they want to eat kosher? Now, this sometimes happens with a young person, you know, she's 22 years old or 25 years old, she's living at home. And she says, you know, my mother will go mad if I don't eat her roast beef, just because it doesn't come roast from a kosher shop.
At least it's
roast beef, as Marion said. Yeah. At least it's roast beef. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, so there the person is, you know, it's a complicated situation.
Then you get people in families, some people are more from inclined, that more from, some people are less of that attitude, they're not maybe so inclined to be as from as the other, maybe members of the family.
You're quite right, you can have people moving at different speeds or moving in different directions.
Some of the family may be as from maybe as the other part of the family.
And you got to, you see, the Torah and the guidance of the Torah will provide a way to proceed, whatever situation you're in. How to move and what to do and what's the best thing to do. It's
not. When I stayed with my cousins last year in Prague, I tried to go every year over 2 years. Just to make it short, I'm trying my best. And I, rather than make them do what I want them to do, which I couldn't, I would have just salad or. And I thought it was rather unkind. It doesn't matter now, but I decided not to dwell on it. I've come from the synagogue.
How beautiful.
One cousin's on one side and the daughter on the other, and they're both sitting, I shouldn't really say this because it's family, but, and they're eating a sausage right in front of me and saying, it's a pity you cannot eat it. And it hurt me for a lot, but you know what the test was? I didn't do my usual arguing and shouting. I just felt very hurt, and I let it go. But that's already better than shouting back or make an atmosphere and then I feel bad.
Absolutely.
And I thought, well, what can I do? What could I do? Yeah. I was in their home. And there's many times they've done that kind of thing, but I think now.
And they live in Prague.
Yeah,
how beautiful, in the beautiful atmosphere of
they're all intermarried.
The Maharal of Prague.
Yes, well, they said, you will go to the cinema. and we will sit in the pub round the corner. It's a pity you cannot have a beer with us. And I smiled. No, what I'm saying is at least I didn't argue, which I've done before.
Yes,
so I'm one stage on.
No. Yes,
it seems like getting a bit stronger.
I agree.
Who knows
you.
One day what they will do?
You're quite right.
Yeah.
But it's not my place to tell them. I finally
well,
so late.
Just the fact that you're there is a very, very positive thing for them.
But not by forcing them.
No, you have to be all smiles, and that's the way that you will give a good advert about eating kosher.
It's taken me years. but it hurt.
Well,
but I didn't need to justify it or say why I was doing it. And I had that the year before with the cake at Pesach time.
Oh,
it's pity that I couldn't.
You couldn't eat their
big yeast cake. It was delicious. And they're all sitting around the table. I think, what do they gain from it? But it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter to go into the psychology of why. And I took my matzot with me.
Right.
Not that I'm holier than thou or better than them,
I mean,
but it's where I'm at.
Listen, that's right.
I mean, I never know where they'll come to.
This is it. I have very firm friends for years. Honey and in Riverside Road, they were friends over 30 years and everything. But I wasn't that firm at that time. They used to come into my home all the time. They wouldn't eat anything by me, but they would always have a drink.
Right.
Always orange drink. I'd always have an orange drink or lemon or whatever, but they wouldn't eat.
That's so sweet.
Me. Right. But they would always come with great for over 30 years, the whole family. I'm Mrs. Boker and she was in Auschwitz. And they would come in, and the two daughters, they're all married now, they've all got children, they've all got about 8 children, these two, my friends, the two girls, Honey and Hannah and Rachel, they've all got a family, so they've got about 8-9 children. But always saying that, but out of respect, they would always come in, but they wouldn't eat, but they would always have a drink, orange drink, that will happen.
That's very sweet. All right, that's very good. So the person looking at himself thinks about the fact that he is able to desire something forbidden. You see, here we're moving to a more like microscopic level. This is a person who eats kosher, but he thinks to himself he could desire something which is not kosher. Not that he wants actually to eat it or that he would do any step in order to eat it, because he'll draw back as soon as it comes into his mind. But the fact that his heart might desire something forbidden, there's a sense in which, for this person, he sees, you know, this puts him very low on the scale of existence. And that helps us understand a kind of humility. And if we can have that humility in relation to God, we realize how low we are, then we can always be happy, because every direction is up. we can be very low. We can recognize how low we are, and from that we can feel a certain kind of joyfulness, and we don't feel complaining. Ubazer, because through this, hu gudur umashukat sumasur of Yoiser, he's actually lower than impure animals, or creepy crawlers, as we mentioned before, or as King David said in Psalms, I'm a worm, not a man. Now, why is the person as low as a worm, or lower than a worm? Because the worm is not doing anything forbidden. The creepy crawly is doing exactly what God told it to do, and that's what it wants to do, and that's what it does. The human being who wants something that is forbidden is going lower than his station in life. He's got a desire to be lower than his station in life. Now, whatever the creature is, it's doing what it was created to do. If a person wants to do something lower than their station in life, they've got a desire to be lower than they are. And that is the unique quality of man. A human being has got the power to descend lower than God desires for that person. God gives us choice. God gives us free will. And with that free will, we can do things which are very exalted, and we can also do things very stupid. And even if we don't actually do the stupid things, we can want to do them, and the person who looks into his own heart and says, what? You were so low that you wanted to do this and this. And even when his divine soul does take power over him, to arouse love to God at the time of davening. Okay, so this is wonderful. The person now starts davening, and he gets into a, or she gets into a whole mood of davening, that it's really something beautiful. And they start davening, and they go on step after step, and they come to the Shema, and they say the Shema with such total feeling. It's really, really beautiful. The trouble is, even though at this moment their heart is really filled with love of God, there's a problem. Eino be'emes la'amita legamri. This love is not totally true. Why not? Because the love goes away after the davening, and after the davening a person might actually want to do completely the opposite, and might, and you know, sometimes might even do it. That's the thing, we go up and down in a most ridiculous way, and at one point in the day we may be very spiritual and holy, and another point we may actually have the most terrible things in our mind.
True, nice. You do go up and down sometimes. I think it depends on the mood as well, what happens. Sometimes what happens during the day. You might go in and you're light-hearted, by the time you've finished and come out...
Well, that's an interesting thing. You know? So it means we're a slave to whether someone else was nice to us, and whether it's too hot or whether it's too cold. You know, it means we are, you know, just being battered, or, you know, like a ping pong ball.
I mean, you know, sometimes you might go in and you might have quite a pleasant day, and you'll be the same all the time. You know, you'll be the same as you were in the morning. You can be like that 10 o'clock at night. Other times you'll go in, maybe something happened at work or something's this, you've come home, you've had a row or something like that, and you're in a terrible mood or something. Not intentionally, it's just something that the events that have happened during the day or something.
You mean to not be bothered? To not be bothered. I mean, to detach yourself from anything that can make you up and down.
You can't.
Well, it's a very big challenge how to do that, and you may have commitments to those people. You see, your cousins, for example, you're very concerned about them. They're your relatives. So you care more about them. Yes. So that puts you more in a vulnerable situation.
But I had a choice whether to start arguing my usual old self and make an atmosphere and then feel guilty, or not to say anything. Mm.
Well, I'm sure that you did the right thing.
But it's good if one can not be a slave to one's...
Well, you see, that needs a constant, skillful talking to yourself in order to talk yourself through difficult situations, so that you don't lose yourself at this or at that. You know, especially in all the different confrontations with other people. You know, and there's some people that we don't know. You know, it might be a parking meter attendant. or it might be people who are very close to us and have the power to upset us and hurt us. You know, so.
But sometimes, not intentionally, sometimes, I think sometimes you need, not always, but you need to answer back as well, because if you don't, the same thing is going to happen again. So, you know,
well,
sometimes you have to fight fire with fire, because I found that, and it doesn't happen again, because I don't let anybody tread on me. I won't tolerate that. And I, in a nice way, but I think sometimes, how can I put it, you have to put your foot down as well with people, because otherwise people take advantage of you and they may do this again.
That's one of the paradoxes in Hasidic teaching.
Is it the right way? You know, I'm saying,
I would say it is the right way. What you're saying.
Let somebody sort of tread on you.
No, don't let them tread on you.
You
see, one of the paradoxes in Hasidic teaching is that on the one hand, it wants us to be very selfless. But on the other hand, as the Rebbe put it, we shouldn't be a doorstep which is trampled. You know, so there's a way of being selfless, and at the same time, in a sense, getting done what should be done, and not being at the you know, not being pushed to the end of the queue just because you're such a selfless person.
Talking of doorstep, was it Beth or maybe Joseph Martin, one of the two, that said you can't be a doorstep if you're lying down? I don't get that though.
Well, I don't know. No, sounds as if you could.
I don't know what it means.
I don't know.
But what I was saying to Dr. Lorenzo about this is sort of like fighting fire with fire. But sometimes you need to sort of put people in their, in a nice way, but put people in their places, because if not, they'll tread on you and they'll do it again.
Is that a conceited point?
You know, I mean, once they know that you're not going to sort of tolerate the way they speak to you, or you don't like that, they won't do it again. But if you
I think the right way of behaving, you know, towards another person
it's very
is being firm.
Firm, yes.
Not polite.
Firm. Yeah. This
yes.
is
very
yeah.
difficult.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying.
A lifelong work.
Yeah. You be firm but polite.
Polite.
Okay. So it's difficult.
What they call in modern days assertiveness.
Yes.
And yes. I think that is the right approach. You know what? Mm. Loving the other person is a way of helping you being firm, because you love that other person and you don't want them, in a sense, to besmirch themselves by treading all over you. You know, that's not their benefit. That's not their best route. That's not their best interest. That's right. Okay, so let's just take another few lines over here. Ubifrat, and especially, when a person thinks about sins they may have committed when they were young, and the way these youthful sins, whatever they were, caused a flaw in the upper world, and there it's above time, and it's as if he did that wrong thing right now, mamash. And even though he's repented, he's repented in the proper way for this bad action, the main quality of repentance is in the heart, and the heart has many different levels, and everything depending on how much of a person he is, how much of a real mensch, a real man, and according to the time and the place, as people know. And therefore, at this moment, that he sees the loisolik bein ahoyred and ishmosa, that the flame in his soul doesn't flare up, miklal, that means yoim loin is kablo tshuvosoi, his repentance was not accepted, va'avoinoisov mavdilim, and his sins are separating, oi shiroitim la'aloisa l'tshuvi ilo yoise, or they want from heaven, they want to elevate him to a higher level of repentance, m'unka deliver from the depths of his heart, yoise even more. V'lechein omer David, and that's why King David said, v'chotasi negdi somid, my sin is always before me. In other words, we're talking about a person starting off being depressed, just being like a stone. How can he bring himself to feel more enthusiasm? By looking at how low he is in all these different ways and seeing that he is so low. And from that, it's like beating the log of wood which is on the fire. You beat it with the poker and the flames start burning up. Right. And in that way, we're able to make a step upwards.
to sort of improve things gradually, to go up.
Yes.
Go up.
Can't beating yourself up
forever. No. But it's in a way where you are doing it in a guided way. You're not doing it in a depressive way which leads you down. Yes. You're doing it in an inspired way which leads you up.
King David must have been very depressed.